As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred with you in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest today is New York City-based guitarist Steve Conti. Over the course of his career, he sat in with numerous artists and also played in the reformed New York Dolls, as well as currently in the Michael Monroe Band. His new solo single, Recovery Doll, is our reason for chatting today, though. It's out on Wicked Cool Records and a recent coolest song in the world. We'll get a taste of it now, and then I'll be back with Steve for your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
You had it all. You gotta kick chemicals and alcohol. It's your recovery doll. It's your recovery doll. Everything changed when you came along. Every little word in every song. You were always right and the world was wrong.
Mighty Manfred here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. And for today's Coolest Conversations, my guest is rock and roll guitarist Steve Conti, whose long resume includes playing in the reformed New York Dolls and currently in the Michael Monroe Band, as well as pursuing his solo career. Hey, Steve, how are you?
Hey, Manfred, I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm hanging in there, and I'm very happy to get a chance to speak again. It's been a couple of years, I think.
Yeah, Rockaway was the last time we spoke,
right,
I guess.
2017. Well,
thanks.
Good to speak with you again, man. And I've got to ask, wow, how did last year go for you? Were you able to keep healthy?
Oh, man, yeah. Knock wood. Everything was, fine. I'm now fully vaccinated. I don't know if it's political to say that on your show or not, but, I consider myself my wife is a scientist, so I believe in the science. And, I feel like it's part of what's going to help bring everything back, especially live music is by being vaccinated, because I am dying to get back out and start playing again. Let me tell you.
Oh, I love to hear that I love to hear that you're vaxxed to the max, because I need to see you up rocking on stage.
Yeah, and, man. I haven't gone this long without playing a gig since I was probably 13 years old. And even then, I played at least, one or two gigs a year at like the local teen dance or the swim club or, this is like 14 months of not playing live music. It's crazy.
Well, thinking back to those early days, we've spoken before about you and your brother's early bands like Company of Wolves and Crown Jewels, but I wasn't aware until recently that if I got this straight, your mom was a jazz singer.
Yes, yeah, she still is. As long as she's alive, she'll always be a jazz singer. She's not performing regularly at this time because she's getting up there and not, very mobile these days,
right.
But she's active in the voice teaching community. And she also does hypnotherapy but she has released a jazz album. We actually gave it to her as a Mother's Day gift a few years back. My brother and I, we gave her a concert in New York City with some of the best jazz musicians in the biz. And we rehearsed with her. We sat in with her and played too. We made this album called But Beautiful, which is out on CD on Amazon and downloads and everywhere you can find it.
Wow.
So if you're curious where the musicality of the Conti family comes from, it's from my mom, Rosemary. She's swinging and sings with loads of feeling, and she's got the blues and everything.
Well, did you, when you were younger, you mentioned you and your brother playing, doing this more recent album for, did you back her up when you were younger?
Yes, we did. That's kind of how we learned to be professionals. You know, we had to, she would say, well, you know, we have this gig this weekend, and we would play like private parties and, you know, weddings and whatever, and lounges with her. And she would say, we have to learn these songs. And we'd always have to, when it was a male song, like sung by a male on the record, and she wanted to sing it, we had to transpose it.
Yeah.
You know? So if a man sings it in the key of C, we automatically know that my mom sings it up.
Right.
Like a fourth or fifth higher. So we'd have to transpose that song from C into like F or G. So we got really good at transposing, and like quickly on the spot too, like on the bandstand. Oh, someone would request a song. It'd be like, okay, well, that's a Stray Cat song. That's in D. So she's got to sing it in G. Ready? Two, three, go. And we'd have to, you know, like do it on the spot, you know? So,
yeah.
So we got real good
here. Let me interrupt it to ask you this, because the other thing here is, so your mom, her repertoire wasn't just limited to jazz standards. Well, I mean, was she singing Stray Cat songs?
Oh yeah. Well, we did. I just used, that's the first song I could think of.
Okay,
in the key of D,
okay.
But I was thinking of Rock This Town, you know, but certainly, you know, she did the Madonna, the Cyndi Lauper, the Anita Baker, you know, this was like in the '80s when we were coming up, you know, playing with her. And so like those songs were in female keys, but if there was ever a, you know, a Sinatra song or a something, she didn't really sing too many male rock songs, 'cause she had me and my brother there to sing them.
Right. Right.
So, but you know, male, like jazz standards, you know, anything Sinatra, Tony Bennett sang, or Louis Prima, whoever.
Oh,
you know,
that's
we,
cool.
We had to like quickly transpose them, you know?
So you have kind of this foundation in jazz, and I think you went to like Rutgers on a, maybe it was on a scholarship, and that was like a, focusing on jazz guitar.
Yeah, I was kind of a little bit of a misbehaved boy in high school, and I was like on my way to getting in a lot of trouble with various habits that I had, shall we say.
You juvenile delinquent.
Well, you know, I don't want to promote it. It was, it's just what happened. You know, it's not like I brag about it or, you know, feel great about it. But anyway, I was on this trajectory. I, one day after a particularly bad night, woke up on the lawn of Brookdale College and my nose was pouring blood. And I was like, in the blazing sunlight. And I was like, I'm on the lawn of a college. How did I get here? I was like, this must be a sign. I need to get my stuff together. And the next day I enrolled in that college there to like get started, because I got out of high school. I thought, oh, I'm not going to college. I'm just going to paint houses for, you know, a few years and then get into New York City and like start a band. But, you know, music saved my life, because I started studying jazz guitar with one of my mom's accompanists, this guy, Harry Leahy, amazing jazz guitarist from New Jersey, who's not with us any longer, but I started studying with him and studying music at Brookdale. And I transferred out of there to Rutgers. And I rode the wave there for like four and a half years and, you know, got a scholarship. So, you know, it was like, who's going to turn down a free education?
Right. Well, you have this foundation in jazz. Well, why did you need to rock?
Well, I always rocked. It was more the other way around. It's like, you know, I was already a really good rock guitar player. So like, why go into jazz? I had a thirst for knowledge. You know, I wanted to learn more about harmony and like, why, what is that chord? And how do you play a solo on that chord? And, and I heard Wes Montgomery records from when I was a little kid, 'cause my dad had a great record collection. And I started getting more into, it was kind of a progression. It went from like, you know, rock and roll, Beatles, Stones, then like a little more complex, Zeppelin, and then it was Yes, then like Prague, and then it was Jeff Beck, and then it was Mahavishnu Orchestra. And by then, like, you know, they were like blinding guitar players, you know? And I was like, how do I do that? You know, I can already do Jimmy Page and Jimi Hendrix, and, you know, what's next?
Well, what's next for you right now is your latest single, Recovery Doll, right? It's our coolest song in the world this week. It's out on Wicked Cool Records.
Right on.
Thinking about the idea of the song, Recovery Doll, is it a specific female artist we all know and love, or is it like a composite of that type of person?
Yeah, I like to write about composite people. Many of my songs are about that. Like, I start getting very specific about one person, and like, I don't want that person or anyone else to think it's only about that person,
yeah,
and kind of make it more universal. And hopefully that opens up the meaning a little more to be about anyone. But, you know, I was definitely thinking about a particular artist, who you might have guessed by now. but her story didn't go the way of this song necessarily. So mm-hmm. it was kind of a wishful, you know, like I wish it could have gone that way. You could have got help and stuck around mm-hmm. for a while. But, we all have, we all know people who, are in these situations, you know, and, they slip and slide with their, drug of choice, shall we say, whether it's, mm-hmm. you know, alcohol or gambling or whatever it is. And, you know, they go in and out of various kinds of recovery, or what is it, 12-step programs, or, you know, therapy or whatever. And sometimes they make it out. Sometimes they survive and become better and stronger. And sometimes they're not so lucky.
When did you come up with the song idea?
You know, I had this music for years. I had this musical track. In fact, I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I presented this song to the New York Dolls. I presented it to Michael Monroe. It didn't have these lyrics.
Yeah.
But it didn't get cut by either of those bands. I'm like, this is still, it's a really good song. It just needs a really great lyric. And finally, I latched onto that title.
Yeah.
And I wrote the song around it. And it's like, yes. Well, maybe if they had heard the song like it is now, it would have been a different story. But then it wouldn't be on my new record. So yeah,
absolutely.
Everything works out like it's supposed to.
Right. And so backing you on the recording, at least my notes say, is your brother John on bass, Charlie Drayton on the drums.
Yes.
And your 10-year-old son, Zaya, is contributing backing vocals.
He's 12 now.
He's 12. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he just turned 12.
First, let me ask you about your brother, John, because you guys had played together years ago. I know he like went on to do stuff with Southside Johnny. Has he remained as active musically as you have?
Oh, yeah. He's been with Southside for 10 or 15 years now, probably at least 10 years, maybe more. But they're still, I don't know what's going on with the pandemic. I know they did a couple of like outdoor, like drive-in concerts and stuff, but I'm not sure what their schedule is. But yeah, he's actually making his first solo album now. We should be hearing about that someday soon.
Are you contributing to that at all? Do you plan it?
I haven't. Well, there's one song that we wrote together that I'm on, but he's mostly been doing it on his own. I mean, he like sends me tracks and says, "Hey, what do you think of this one?" And I weigh in on it, you know, if he wants. But I mean, he's his own writer. I mean, he's great. Very different from my style. More introspective, softer. You know, more acoustic based, you know, where I'm like loud and boisterous.
You know? Well, let's talk about Charlie Drayton for a second, because this, the drummer certainly got a resume. I'm guessing he started as the drummer in the Australian band, The Divinals, but he's also played with Keith Richards and the Expensive Winos.
Oh, yeah.
Recordings from the B-52s and The Cult, to Roseanne Cash. How did your man manage to land him on the drums?
I've known Charlie since the early 90s. His wife too, Chrissy Amphlett from the Divinals, who has sadly passed away a few years ago, from breast cancer. So I had met Charlie, he was probably, a couple of years into playing with the Divinals when we met. And, we just met from the same circles of musicians in New York. You know, I can't even remember the day we met or anything, but it was like, oh, there's Charlie. And he knew who I was, and boom, we became friends. And we actually played on September 11th, a month later, I organized a benefit show for my cousin's firehouse. He was the only one who came back alive from his firehouse on 9/11. Wow. And so I wanted to like give, because I heard all this stuff was happening with the Red Cross. They were keeping the money. And I was like, and all these other agencies, not to single out the Red Cross, I don't know. I just wanted to be sure that the money got straight into the hands of the widows, especially ones with children.
Yeah.
And so I organized this concert at Don Hills, which you might remember, the club in the lower Manhattan there. Mm-hmm. And Charlie and Chrissy and my brother and I, we played a little Divinals set together.
Oh, cool.
So, which was a blast because I love that record, the Touch Myself.
Yeah.
It was called. And Charlie's all over that and he just grew so hard. So it was a blast to play that with them. And over the years, I've done other things with him. He played on an album my brother and I released back in 2003 called The Contis, believe it or not. Bleed Together is the name of the album. It's out there. You can find it everywhere, you know, Amazon, streaming, you know. Charlie's done a bunch of cuts on there and we've done other live, the Hilfiger sessions, live gigs. And I've played all over the world actually with Charlie, with Bernard Fowler from the Stones. We have a little thing together that we would go and do these events in like Venice and the south of France. And, you know, just, it's always a first class with Charlie playing, of course, too, but also, you know, the gigs are always great.
Man, just the whole Conti family is so musical. And you mentioned your son, Zaya, contributing backing vocals. You said he's 12 now?
Yeah, he's 12, and he's been writing songs since, I've been holding my iPhone up to his mouth since he was a little kid, you know, since he was like 4 or 5. In the beginning, it was just like funny little quotes and stuff. Then eventually he started singing melodies. I'm like, whoa, this kid, where's he getting these melodies from? You know, he was like singing, like scatting jazz melodies. It sounded like my mom, you know, on the wrong speed. And around 7 or 8, we recorded his first demos of his original songs. He'd been writing songs, like lyrics and melodies and everything. And now we've got quite a little arsenal of stuff. So, you know, at some point we're going to do a record.
Absolutely.
And he's also a singer, an actor, an artist. He writes stories, he draws, he's like multi, you know, it's all arts with him.
Wow. Well, let's talk some more about Recovery Doll. I was wondering, like, when and where did you record it?
It was recorded during these sessions that took place in September 2019.
All right.
Yeah, because we started doing it and then the pandemic hit.
Right.
But we recorded in September and then I went out on tour and, you know, the band was done. It was just up to me to like do the overdubs and do the vocals. Yeah. I went out, I did some dates with Monroe and then January 2020 came up and I pretty much finished it and then went with Monroe on tour in Finland and then pandemic hit and I came home and everything shut down.
Right.
So we recorded it out of the studio in Brooklyn called Atomic Sound. Really great place. Great room. It's a totally pro studio with like old school gear, you know, tape machines and real pianos and B3 organs, and vintage drum kits and amps. It's a really great place. I've done a number of records there, produced for other people and my own stuff. So,
speaking of producers, so this guy, Andrew Hollander, was working with you. Can you tell us about him? Can you tell us about Andrew?
Yeah. And I call him Andy. He likes to be professional and say Andrew, but I just call him Andy.
Tell us about Andy.
Andy and I have known each other and worked together since like mid-90s, like 97. We were in a band together called Mr. Henry. I was a guitar player and one of the songwriters and singers, but it was mainly this other guy's band. But we met there and worked well together and he produced that album, The Contis, Bleed Together, I was telling you about.
Okay.
Me and my brother did in 2003 that Charlie was on. So that's like the team is together again. It's like my brother, me, Charlie, and Andy. We worked so well together back in 2003. I thought, you know, when I got together with Andy, I said, you know, I have these songs and I would love to, you know, record them. They're rock and roll songs, but, you know, I want something different, you know. And I just know Charlie always brings like this unique, quirky groove to stuff that he does. And so it's not just going to be like your average don't that, you know, kind of rock beat. You know what I mean? He does these funky little weird things. So Andy agreed with that and, you know, helped me arrange. There were other songs that we recorded that had keyboards on them. And, you know, he's just got great. He's a very musical guy. He's got some good musical ideas, but I mean, you know, although the songs were mine and they're a guitar song. So it's some of it's kind of like a no brainer the way it's going to be recorded, you know, but he's a good organizer as well. You know, this day we're going to do this and this day we're going to do that. I have so much to think about in the studio that I really love having somebody like him around who's very musical and methodical, you know.
Who came up with the that little backing vocal bit on Recovery Doll? I think it's like a oo-wop shoo-bop kind of.
Oh, oom-bop shoo-bop.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't in the original recordings that when I presented this song to the other bands that I told you about. So that's part of the hooky thing about it.
Yeah.
When I came up with that, I came up with that vocal. I sang it myself on my demos of it. And I said, this would be really great to have some girls sing on. So we didn't mention the there's two girls, ladies singing on that as well. Nikki Richards, who's very well known for tons of gigs, Madonna, she sang with, and probably Luther Vandross, and I don't know, just tons of people, and LaJuan Carter Dent. So I had them come in and sing on some stuff. And once they did their part, I said, it's really fun, but it's missing a little something, a little, some kind of different personality. And I said, Zaya. So I added him.
Oh,
he did it at home, you know, here in our house where we live, in our apartment. I have a whole little studio set up here. So, you know, we did that other stuff in the big studio in New York. And I just came into like my little studio room in my apartment and added his part, and boom, that was it.
And so this song is part of a upcoming album that comes out maybe in October. Is that the plan?
There are a number of other songs that were recorded and with the same lineup, and so the whole album is going to be pretty groovy.
Very cool. Now, your last single with Wicked Cool was Gimme Gimme Rockaway in 2017. That's back when we had the last time to chat.
Mm-hmm.
But you were working with fellow Wicked Cool Records artist Brian Ray on a 2018 single side he had called Trash Man. I think that's a song you guys wrote together.
Yes. We had been, you know, talking about let's do something together. I don't even remember how we met. I think we just met because we were label mates, you know, and he liked my stuff and I liked his stuff. We'd been hearing each other on the air. So we decided to whip up something for the B-side of his single. What was it? Pirate Radio? So I had this, I said, okay, I'll whip something up. And I had this song called Trash Man. And I had this track. I sent it to him and he said, oh, that's great, but I already have the track. But can I use the lyrics? And I said, sure. So he just like took my lyrics off of my track. And so, yeah, now my track is naked with no words, but
you know, it worked out okay for Recovery Doll not having lyrics for a long time. So
exactly. No, and it's fine because, you know, sometimes you find out when you're writing that these things are meant to happen. So I think it's much better. That lyric is much better suited sitting in his song. You know, it's slightly different than what I had, but you know, the title is the same, Trash Man, and some of the lines from the verses are the same.
Yeah.
He really whipped it up nicely, and I played six string bass solo on it and sang back up on it, and yeah, it was a blast to make.
Well, I hope you guys can actually jam sometime together in the future.
I know, we've never actually been in the same room with guitars. We met, you know, we hung out backstage at a McCartney show once when he was playing with Paul, but we have never sat down with guitars, so live anyway, you know.
Well, that's all to come. One more thing I wanted to ask you about, talk about a little bit, was the B-side, Rock and Rye Queen. So in 2014, you released your New York City album, and it's got a version of that song on it. But for the B-side of Recovery Doll, it's a different version. Can you tell us about it, the difference in the two versions of the song?
Yeah, the B-side version is, it's actually the band that my brother and I, it was during the time that we had the band Crown Jewels, which my brother plays on the Steve Conte NYC record anyway, on that version. But he's also playing bass on this version, singing back up. And we had our drummer at the time, Steve Murphy, is playing drums on this version and also singing background, so you can hear it. It's got like a really weird bridge with a kind of I don't know how to describe it, almost jazzy harmonies at one point that are not in the original one. So it's a really interesting little moment in time, a little snapshot of where things were at in 1995 when it was recorded. But that's when the song was written. And actually, the other band I mentioned that Andy Hollander and I were in, Mr. Henry, we also did a version of that in that band that I sang. So There are three recordings of Rock and Roll Queen out there. There's this one, which is my Crown Jewels band on the version. Then there's another version with the Mr. Henry band playing it. And then there's my my version from the NYC album, which is, let's see, who's on drums on that? I think it's Rich Pagano on drums, my brother on bass, and yeah, just guitarist, me. If you're a completist, you'll want to grab this one too.
Well, it's very cool, man. We're going to take a listen to it in a moment. First, Steve, let me thank you so much for speaking with me today on Our Coolest Conversations.
My pleasure, Manfred. Always great to talk to you and look forward to the next time.
All right, let's give this B-side a listen to. It's Rock and Rye Queen from Steve Conte and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
He met her at the bar. Were fading stars. She could not hide behind her whiskey and coke. It's a mystery to me how we stayed so long in this town. Little sisters having twins, and they're just having one more round till they spin.
And Rye Queen, that's Steve Conte here in the Underground Garage, doing the B-side to his latest single, Recovery Doll, out on Wicked Cool Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Steve for speaking with me on today's Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our segment. Next week, I'll be joined by Taylor Hollingsworth, guitarist in the Birmingham, Alabama band The Blips, whose lineup is a local supergroup of sorts. Their self-titled debut album is out now on Cornelius Chapel Records, and we'll talk all about it next time on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe, Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Don't let it decide, baby, diamond ring.